7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. This hour, tonight, May Day, is being sponsored by Richard Hodar. Thanks, Richard. Here's his message. I listened to your show on April 25th. The Soviet Union wanted to be a communist country. In my college political science class, I learned that the first step toward that end was the dictatorship of the proletariat. So these Republican bastards want our country to go to that end. I'll be 65 years old in June, and I don't want to be categorized as being over 50 and voting for Republicans. Happy May Day. We should go back to where storks delivered babies and not women. Really? Okay, Richard. Thank you. Thanks for the sponsorship. I think what we're going to do tonight, there's a couple things to talk about, but I'd like to hear from you. Either the May Day Occupy demonstrations, if you want to bring to the program your impression of that, or what the British panel found about Rupert Murdoch and his whole filthy organization. He is unfit. Unfit. To run a huge international company. So the voice of the Republican Party in the United States is run by a collection of half-asses, liars, cheats, phone hackers, sneaks, thieves, deceivers. There have been over 100 arrests in this this deal in the UK. So, a joint committee of the British government issued the report saying, on the basis of the facts and evidence before the committee, we conclude that Rupert Murdoch did not take steps to become fully informed about phone hacking. He turned a blind eye and exhibited willful blindness to what was going on in his companies and publications. This corporate culture, we consider, permeated from the top throughout the organization. It speaks volumes about the lack of effective corporate governance in News Corporation and News International. We conclude, therefore, that Rupert Murdoch is not a fit person to exercise the stewardship of a major international company. In a statement from its New York headquarters, the pigs at News Corporation said it was, quote, carefully reviewing the select committee's report and will respond shortly, end quote. The statement also, News Corporation also issued a statement that said the company, quote, fully acknowledges significant wrongdoing at News of the World and apologizes to everyone whose privacy was invaded, end quote. It's bigger than that. News Corporation, you pigs are going down. And I think everybody in the United States who can still think, all 312 of us, understand. It took the Brits, though, to peel back the cover on this nest of cockroaches. Now, the Justice Department has launched a full-scale investigation of Murdoch's operations here. So look for the Republicans pretty soon to start screaming about violation of the First Amendment. Occupy gets together on a public street, and these pig Republicans want them all jailed. But let there be, and the Occupy people rightly state that they're exercising their First Amendment rights. Let this filth that employed some of the most destructive voices in American media over the past decade, let this corporation finally have to be held accountable, and you will hear squealing like so many wild pigs coming from all of these right-wingers. Ofcom, which I guess is the Office of Communications, that's a British media regulator, In a statement after the report was published, Ofcom said it had a legal duty, quote, to be satisfied that any person holding a broadcasting license is and remains fit and proper to do so. Ofcom is continuing to assess the evidence, including the new and emerging evidence that may assist it in discharging these duties. Now, the Brits may take a while, but they're serious about this stuff. They will close this son of a bitch down and maybe put them all in jail. The parliamentary report that was issued today said that by ignoring, quote, evidence of widespread wrongdoing, end quote, News Corp and its British newspaper subsidiary, News International, exhibited, quote, willful blindness for which the company's directors, including Rupert Murdoch and James Murdoch, should ultimately be prepared to take responsibility, end quote. And the panel raised the possibility that three senior former managers at News International could be cited for contempt of Parliament for misleading the panel in their testimony. That means lying. Now, News International had long maintained that hacking had been the work of what was termed a single rogue reporter. Remember that? An argument that the panel found in releasing its report today to be, quote, simply astonishing, end quote. It also said News Corporation tried and succeeded in throwing lower-ranking executives to the wolves while, quote, striving to protect more senior figures, most notably James Murdoch, end quote. Oh, please, please go after this filth in the United States. Please. Shut them down. Send them to jail. Cast their buildings into the biblical lake of fire. Salt the property. Release a herd of rats to go through the buildings and eat everything. No, rats wouldn't do it. All right, so the British government has finally realized what, for some reason, Americans refuse to recognize, that the Murdoch terror organization is just that. And the terror that it perpetrates in this country, I don't know, what it did in the UK, except what I've read in the paper, so to speak, where they were lying, thieving, sneaking, illegitimate rat bastards. But in this country, they feed false information to millions of people daily, and their talking heads reinforce the false information. They are worse than a propaganda machine, and they're destroying the country, and they should be shut down. To yell fire falsely in a crowded theater is not protected by the First Amendment. Don't forget to always put the word falsely in there, folks. I hear so many people say, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, the hell you can't. If the place is burning down, of course you can. You can't yell it falsely. And the Murdoch Empire in this country and all of its hirelings, every single one of these scum, have done everything they can to confuse, to render millions of people in this country incapable of making an informed decision. This was the goal. They're not there to provide news. Nobody at Fox ever does anything that remotely resembles anything except reading headlines. They are there to destroy the United States. They are there to destroy the country. Every single one of them. The Hannitys, the O'Reillys, Beck, when his filthy ass worked there, they are all there to destroy the country for sport. So, what do you think's going to happen here, huh? All right. We'll take some calls when we come back. 877-996-2556.
for Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here. Mark is in Seattle. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, this is Mark Taylor Canfo, Mike, from the Occupy Media Working Group.
Oh, yeah. And hi, Mark.
Hey. I appreciate you giving us a voice on your program so we can occupy the airwaves. We, unfortunately, have been dodging pepper spray and tear gas here today. And strangely enough, or interestingly enough, do you know who Phoenix Jones is, the our local self-styled superhero here?
I don't, no.
Well, he's sort of, he started a sort of movement. He dresses up in a superhero costume and kind of acts like a vigilante and wants to police the community. Well, he ended up pepper spraying a bunch of May Day demonstrators here today, which I guess from his point of view maybe was a publicity stunt, I don't know. But it started a whole series of things that happened, and unfortunately by the end of the first march at noon there was tear gas being used and some businesses with broken windows, and things got way out of control. So then there was a second march at 3 that marched to the Space Needle, and there were some arrests during that march, but it didn't look like there was, you know, unlike the first march where there was a group that kind of broke away to do their little games, this time they didn't do that on the second march. And now we have a third march happening, and this is taking place right after a bunch of riot police swept through the area where Westlake Park is, where we have a whole day-long concert of hip-hop artists. Really talented musicians down there. But one of the things, I had to do a local public radio program earlier today with a spokesperson from the police department, and one of the things I said was, regardless of what happens on these marches, let's keep Westlake a safe area so people can come down with their kids and, you know, be a part of the May Day celebrations. And unfortunately, after the first march, I guess the police changed their mind and decided to sweep through the park and grab a few people. I don't know what their intent was.
Well, you know, it the way it's being reported by various media, windows broken, tires slashed, large amounts of glass on the ground in Seattle from vehicles and buildings, including the federal courthouse, smashed by protesters. It says the peaceful protesters remained at Westlake Plaza. One guy from Canada said, I want to understand where they're coming from. And then they pull something like this. I'm from Canada. Imagine the impression this gives me of the United States. At an afternoon press conference, apparently your mayor, Mike McGinn, said a group known as the Black Bloc did extensive damage to the federal courthouse and moved on to Black Bloc traffic. You know, this is a part that really drives me insane. By doing this kind of juvenile, crazy crap, these ones who are doing the breaking and the smashing are playing right into the hands. This is exactly what the right wing wants them to do. And it makes me think that they are either provocateurs or plants or crazy sons of bitches, when the whole Occupy movement has nothing to do with these pigs. And I don't get this. Do you, can you interpret, you know, what, you know, how, I realize the movement can't stop thugs like this from acting like this, but this is so self-defeating.
Well, Mike, in a lot of ways, this is reminding me of the WTO demonstrations, not in any way near the scale, but in terms of not only independent groups, you know, taking off from the peaceful protesters and doing their own thing, but also the fact that the mayor and the police department have been talking up the potential violence for over a week now.
Right.
And one of my criticisms to the mayor and the police department was, well, if you're going to be publicizing for a week ahead of the event that there's going to be trouble, then maybe you want to, you know, take a look at your own statements and ask yourself whether some folks who may not have had any intention of being involved with May Day might have headed downtown, because it was almost like a dare. It was almost like they were saying, you know, step on up, you know, we're ready. And I'm really, you know, confused by that. I think the tactics that are used by these small groups that use, you know, the rest of the march for cover is really, really a problem. I do know one thing, that all of the events at Westlake Park were permitted by the city And we made it very clear to the police department, and they understand that Occupy Seattle, as an organizing group, did not endorse any kind of violence or vandalism today.
You know, at what point does Occupy, in all its various shapes and forms in different cities that it's in, at what point do they take a look at these provocateurs and say, okay, we're going to have to control them. We're going to have to, if necessary, encircle them, calm them down, not let them do this. And if it means somebody getting restrained who would otherwise do damage to the entire movement, do you see that as a possibility?
Well, just listening to the dialogue in the alternative media today.
Hey, wait. Mark, can you hold on? I've got to do a break here. Hold that thought. And I want to get your answer when we come back. All right.
Sure.
All right. Just
absolutely.
All right. Hold on, if you would. Well, what we're trying to find out here is what sort of tactic should Occupy take in order to marginalize, restrain, or eliminate the thugs that are doing exactly what the right wing wants them to do.
How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you hear me?
Management. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 past the hour, or 25 before the hour. All right, we're talking with Mark Taylor Canfield of Occupy Seattle. What do you do about that element that is going to attach itself to a nonviolent movement and try to turn it violent? What do you do, Mark?
Well, I do want to say this, that the two marches that took place after the first march, there has been no vandalism. So that was an earlier incident that has not, you know, been the mode of the day.
No, I get that. But all over
right.
media now, all over mainstream media, is the smash glass, the slash tires, the federal courthouse being attacked. It doesn't make any difference how minimal. You know that media in this country are absolutely determined to put the camera and the pens where the violence is. And
they love that. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, even though subsequent marches today in Seattle might have been peaceful, the damage, so to speak, was done. And the thing I'm curious about, you know, I watched this happen to so many movements that started out as nonviolent, whether it was a student movement, the anti-war movement, the Black Panthers, which were nonviolent, the Black Liberation Movement, the Civil Rights Movement, and eventually every single one of them was infiltrated by provocateurs, by CIA, by FBI, by NSA, or just by punks and bastards who decided to take a movement that was trying to effect social change and corrupt it. So it is, it's happened so many times, Mark, and this has been one of my fears about Occupy, that it was somehow going to be tainted by the punks.
Yes, it's definitely an issue, and I have to tell you that Aaron Dixon spoke to the Hip Hop Occupy group earlier today at Westlake Park, and he is an ex-Black Panther, a member, one of the organizers for the Seattle Black Panthers. And he actually stressed the fact that we really need to reach out to the community. We really need to continue our food programs and reaching out to the labor unions and the middle class and the students and the teachers, you know. So he's about building the movement, which I agree with. And you know, the political philosophies aside, because we do have freedom of speech in this country and people are free to believe what they want. But as far as tactics go, I think that it is detrimental to building a large, large movement that includes 99% of the people. So in that way, in a, you know, sometimes you can maybe look at it like, sort of like who, you know, how Osama bin Laden and George Bush kind of played each other. I see that same thing going on, just like you said, where maybe the people that are doing this stuff, they think that it's going to, you know, somehow get their message across, but the message that they're getting across is one that may alienate a lot of people who actually do support the Occupy Wall Street movement. So one of the things, Mike, that we have to do is make it very clear whenever we speak to the media or the police department or the mayor that we do not condone violence and that we never did endorse any kind of violence today, and make sure that we keep it clear that there's a separation between the Occupy Wall Street movement and other small groups of people who may not even really want to work with the Occupy Wall Street movement, but often, you know, show up at the event. And as long as we keep that clear in our minds and the minds of the media and city officials, that's all we can do in terms of the spin and the perception as far as what's really going to happen within the movement. I hear today so much talk in all the alternative media. I was doing some reports for Free Speech TV earlier, and I'm hearing on all of these programs from all the alternative media and the activists, you know, in the Occupy movement, that yes, this is bringing the question to the forefront. We can't hide it, we can't ignore it, and we have to confront it now. And I hear that in the dialogue around me everywhere. It's like, time to call this out and call it what it is. And, you know, let's get these people to step up and, you know, and say who they are. Unfortunately, they don't. They run, but...
Well, this is so... It is so upsetting because... you know, without trying to sound preachy, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Mark, but the power in this country really is concerned about the alternative power of Occupy. There has not been a movement in this country like Occupy since the 30s. Now, the anti-war movement back in the 60s was pretty powerful, but it was short-lived and it had a specific goal. Occupy has stayed away from that. Occupy has said, we're the 99% and we're not going to take this anymore. This being, I mean, pick the field. It can be business, politics, civil discourse, political parties, election fraud. I mean, just on and on and on. So Occupy is a very threatening movement to the power structure in this country. I would not be the least bit surprised to find out that the thugs who are running through Occupy, who are identifying with the movement and doing this damage, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, Mark, to find out that they were paid, that they were doing this deliberately at the ordering of this massive capitalist bloc that does not want to see Occupy move any further than it already has because it is too scary.
I think there are some people who think that today is the revolution, Mike, and they don't get it that it's not, and that we're still living in a country where luckily the military is not gunning us down in the streets. You know, so we need to take a different approach in this country. We need to take, like Aaron Dixon said, we need to take the approach that people took in Egypt. We need to take the approach that people did in Bolivia, which is a nonviolent mass movement that they can't stop. When there is property damage, then they can use that as a justification to crack down on everybody.
Absolutely.
Speech.
Absolutely.
So whether there are infiltrators involved in this agitation group, or whether they are just naive or foolish or whatever, you know, or have differences of opinion on tactics, the reality and the perception is that they might as well be working for the other side, because they're giving them, like you said, a lot of ammunition to use against the, you know, I'm just metaphorically speaking, of course, that they're giving the media and law enforcement a lot of reasons to try to crack down on the movement.
Sure.
Not that they didn't need reasons already, as you just pointed out, because we've all suffered from police harassment and arrests and, you know,
right,
people getting arrested for sleeping and walking through the park in the middle of the night. So, you know, I was hoping that we were beyond that part of the movement where we weren't going to have to fight with the police anymore because it's such a distraction from everything that we're trying to work for. And bottom line, I'm just disappointed today that the message that's getting out is going to be about broken windows, pepper spray, and tear gas, and not about immigrants' rights, workers' rights, you know, the corruption on Wall Street, which is why we're out here today.
Right.
You know, it's sad that the media always is going to spin it towards that corporate, you know, direction, the direction that feeds our corporate masters, And I have to say that, Mike, if we had a day for free education or a day of, you know, let's overturn Citizens United, they would not be here. But because Windows got broken and riot police showed up, now every camera in the friggin' country is here.
That's right.
So that tells you where they're coming from. They're not interested in our issues. They're interested in the spectacle of it. And somehow we got to get beyond that. If we're going to have a spectacle, it should be like the front of the march, actually earlier today, was the GDLT block, and they were all dressed in pink and clowning people and having a great time.
Right.
That kind of spectacle, I totally support, and I think we need to continue. But the media spectacle of, you know, riots in the street is not going to help us at this point.
Well, you know, there's another tactic that I would hope that Occupy would consider, and that is in the 60s and in the 70s, we had teach-ins where we would peel off maybe 6-7 people, and we would go to a university campus. We would go to a high school campus. We would go wherever. And with some advanced publicity, usually flyers, you know, putting them up on telephone poles around where we were going to have a teach-in. And then we would sit there and explain to people what the movement is. At the time, the movement I'm specifically talking about was the anti-war movement. I was a student at NC State University in Raleigh then. It was 1970. And what we would do is hold teach-ins where we would sit down and actually enter into dialogue with real skeptics. People would come over, you know, in 1970, in the South here anyway, the average white person was so pro-war, it would scare the hell out of you. But the teach-ins were effective in breaking down that wall of propaganda that these people found themselves encased in. So I'm hoping that Occupy will move to the next level. In addition to massive demonstrations, there has to be teach-ins where people are educated, and that has a tendency to offset the crazy bastards who want to run on the fringes and destroy things. Do you agree?
I agree. In fact, the response from Occupy Seattle to the $1 trillion in debt on 1T Day was to form a group to create a free university in Seattle. A free library where volunteers from the community, craftsmen, artists, professors who want to volunteer some of their time will be able to teach people who cannot ordinarily get into a college because of the huge student loan problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a great idea, and I totally support them, and I've been trying to write about it and make sure that word gets out, hoping that it, you know, spreads around the country. And the people behind that campaign have a totally different attitude. They really do want to serve the community. And that's one thing that Aaron Dixon said over and over again during his talk. You have to serve the community. If you don't serve the community, why should they support you?
Absolutely. Mark, I've got to leave it there. Stay in touch, especially the rest of this week. There's some other people want to talk about Occupy from today. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate you checking in. Stay in touch, please. We'll be right back. Before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Richard Hodar. His message: I listened to your show on April 25th. The Soviet Union wanted to be a communist country. My college political science class, in that class, I learned that the first step toward that end was the dictatorship of the proletariat. So these Republican bastards want our country to go to that end. I'll be 65 years old in June and don't want to be categorized as being over 50 and voting for Republicans. Happy May Day. We should go back to where storks delivered babies and not women. What the hell does that mean, Richard? Okay, that's cool. Sanchez is in L.A. Hey, Sanchez.
I'm in downtown Los Angeles. Unfortunately, I'm 20 blocks away from the action, so I've been having to call my friends on the other line to see what's been going on. Earlier this afternoon, I did get a chance to look at the television, and I will agree with Mark that the media does concentrate on the spectacle.
Of course.
Getting to, yes. So I'm looking at the horizon, and the television helicopters are floating over the scene right now in Pershing Square. There is a band playing, Son Jarocha, they're called, and there's several hundred people in Pershing Square. In about, I'll say about an hour or so, Occupy LA will begin its official General Assembly. But, yes, the television cameras were all here searching desperately for that spectacle. As far as our waves are concerned, we had waves coming in to downtown Los Angeles from the north, the west, the east, and in the south. And I was a part of the south wave where we came up Central Avenue. For a time, we occupied a key intersection of Central Avenue and 41st, where the what they call the Jazz Park is at.
Uh-huh.
And we stopped. We were giving free food to the community. That was one thing that what we were supposed to be doing along the way. But I'll say that in this end, the LAPD has been firm but restrained. And we were, like I said, at one point we occupied the intersection and we had traffic on both sides backed up. We did that for a while, but then at one point the LAPD did threaten to impound our vehicles. And so at that point we decided, for the sake of the movement, to continue forward. And the people that we picked up continued in the buses that we had. We had rented buses with tokens. And so if you wanted to hop a ride on the bus, you know, there was a token for you. So some people took that opportunity to continue with us to the downtown area. Now, what happened for me was we couldn't continue with my sound system, so I had to transfer everything over to my van, which was further out. So I can't get back in until they unblock the streets. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a subway line to get into downtown L.A. But there were a few moments ago while I was on hold, there were about 8 or 9 LAPD squad cars with their lights and sirens going up. I've been trying to mediate or monitor some of the other news channels. I haven't heard anything yet about that. But that's all I have for you from this point. It hasn't been as bad as it has been in Seattle, I'll tell you that much. At this point, from what I can tell you, like I say, I can call in a little bit later on and report again if you'd like, because I'm going to get on the subway right now. I'm just going to park my van and get into the Pershing Square. That's the only way to get into town, because 20 square blocks is all blocked off, and the downtown L.A. traffic is a snarl right now.
All right. If you can get back in tonight into where you're heading and into this program, please do, Sanchez. If not, we'll talk to you later on in the week, okay?
Okay, I'll do about that then. Thanks.
All right, be careful. Take it easy. Tom in Minnesota reminds me of something that I had totally forgotten. During the days when, might as well say it, during the days when I was a hell of a lot more active than sitting on my ass and behind a microphone, we had marshals that we appointed, whether it was an anti-nuke demonstration, anti-war demonstration, a pro-peace demonstration. It didn't make any difference what it was. We understood, first of all, most of the demonstrations I participated in were here in the South, and there was a lot of ugliness toward, the communist N-word loving betrayers of the white race, of which I guess I was certainly a card carrying member. But the people who would watch these demonstrations. I remember one time marching in silence in commemoration of King's assassination 2 years after he was murdered, and it was a silent march, and we walked through Fraternity Row in Raleigh. It was a march from what we called the Quad on the campus up to the towers that are right at the gate. I don't know how it's configured now. This is a million years ago. But the insults and the challenges that were thrown at us, and a lot of us, we'd been told, ignore it. Just don't listen to it. And we had monitors or parade marshals, people that we appointed to walk outside the main body of the parade to make sure, of the demonstration, to make sure that someone who might get pissed off, like I did, and want to jump out of the line and go over and grab one of these redneck sons of bitches off the front porch of TKE and just pound them into the ground, that we didn't, because that's exactly what was expected. That's exactly what the authorities wanted. That's exactly what the people who thought we were freaks wanted to see. And we used the idea of marshals or parade monitors and even went so far as to give them red armbands. So when one of these parade marshals would say, okay, you know, step over this way, okay, step over that way, we knew that we were being told to do that for a specific reason, to keep what we were doing peaceful and focused. And that's the main thing, to stay focused on what the hell is going on. I don't know if Occupy is organized enough to do that. The movements in the 60s and 70s, as you all know, were kind of top down. We had people who kind of laid out the terms of the demonstrations. Occupy is different from that. So we'll see what happens. More of your conversation when we come back. If you're on hold, stay there. We're going to take your call as soon as we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Think of this. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. This hour is being sponsored by Christopher Keller. His message, Mike, I know this is longer than you like, so feel free to summarize it. Anonymous says, quote, President Obama is definitely the lesser of two evils, however he doesn't need your vote to win. The media, though, in its eternal quest for ratings and controversy, is making this presidential election out to be a horse race. It is not. If you look hard at the electoral map and filter out the nonsense in the polls, you will conclude Obama wins, just not by a landslide. What to do? Participate in this farce of a democracy? Cower in fear over what could happen, which is beyond your control anyway? Why not be strategic and pragmatic instead? Cast a meaningful vote by voting third party, like Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party, send a message of hope for the future and help put the brakes on the headlong rush into fascism that the Democratic Republican Party has set for us, end quote. Thank you, Christopher. So you've heard L.A. and Seattle and Oakland, according to reports, protesters played cat and mouse with police, pounded on windows of banks and other businesses. After surrounding a downtown Bank of America branch, protesters chanted, Oakland is the people's town. Strike, occupy, shut it down. They also gathered at a Wells Fargo bank branch. Police later confronted demonstrators marching through downtown. Video by NBCBayArea.com showed at least one protester being dragged away by police. Protesters hurled items, including a paint bomb, at police and windows out of a police bomb, or van, I'm sorry, according to NBCBayArea.com. Police fired tear gas and flashbang grenades before the skirmishing crowd dispersed. At least four were arrested. San Francisco, Golden Gate ferry workers picketed ferry terminals in the North Bay, but union organizers canceled a protest on the Golden Gate Bridge to give support to the ferry workers, according to the Oakland Tribune. However, scores of California Highway Patrol officers with helmets and batons lined the bridge and gathered around the toll plaza just in case bridge traffic was not disrupted. Albany, New York, state police arrested two men who set up a table without a permit in Lafayette Park. Set up a table without a permit. Chicago, protesters and union supporters held rallies and marches with little disruption to the business district. According to the Chicago Tribune, the police superintendent told the Tribune there were no arrests as rallies wrapped up at Federal Plaza in Denver. 200 people marched downtown before turning into the 16th Street Pedestrian Mall, blocking mall buses and traffic as they walked. Police did not interfere. Only one person reportedly was arrested. That's just some of the reports, and those were earlier this evening. If you have any further information, want to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. John is in Columbus, Ohio, listening on Sirius.
Hey, Mike. I couldn't be further from the opposite of you as anybody could. The what you were talking about a while ago with that gentleman from Seattle, I've never heard such a bunch of crap in my...
Okay, thanks, John. Appreciate you checking in. Listen, seriously, why do you call this program, you right-wingers? You know, as soon as you get a sentence out of your mouth, I'm just going to hang out. I'm not going to engage you. I don't care about you. I'm not here to reach out to you. I'm way past that. Way past that. Younger people may want to reach out to you. I want to reach out to you and smack you upside your goddamn head. That's what I want to do. But to right wingers. But yeah, I don't. You know, I don't do it. The thought is there, though. So don't call me. Really, you've got lots of outlets where you can call with your drivel on talk radio. Call them. And have a little circle jerk with your right wing talk show host, but don't call me. I'm serious. I'm just not interested. Not interested at all. You have nothing, absolutely nothing, worthwhile to say to me or the people listening to this program. You have plenty of worthwhile things to say to your right wing terrorists that dominate media, like Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and Bortz and the rest of these thugs. So please, for the umpteenth time, you know, I spent 20 years trying to reach out to you people, and it was a joke. So I spent the last seven saying, kiss my ass and stop calling. All right? Thank you. God. Jeremy's in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike, talk about a plant. There he was right there.
Oh, my God. I don't get it with people. They know that they're not going to get anything said. As soon as they open their mouths, I'm going to hang up on them. I'm not interested. But
it's
anyway.
Still funny to hear it's still funny to hear it happen, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I was calling in to say that I'm glad to see that Rupert and his creepy-eyed son, James, are finally starting to fall on their own spear.
I hope it happens in this this country, because you know, and I know, and anybody who can still think understands that this Murdoch terror organization would not be doing this stuff only in the UK. Of course they're doing it here. Of course they're doing it in Australia. Of course they're doing it in Canada. Of course they're doing it in China, wherever they have a toehold. That's what they're about. They are slime, absolute slime.
I know. I think a couple months ago, a U.S. celebrity mentioned that they think they were hacked, too. I can't think of the name right now, but I know it was brought up shortly after the British scandal broke.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm hoping this is finally their time to fall.
I hope also. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate you calling. Thanks a lot. Clinton is in Elmira, New York, listening on Sirius. Hello, Clinton.
Good evening, Mike. It's a pleasure to finally get a chance to talk to you. I've called several times, but never gotten through to you, so this is a treat to me. Yes, and just backing up real quick, the guy who called a couple of callers ago said he was from Columbus, Ohio. Maybe now, but not originally, because there was an awfully heavy southern drawl going on with that guy there.
Well, it's probably it might have been Columbus, Georgia, but you know,
maybe that could very well be. Anyway, right. Nothing that you and I have to bother wasting our time on. We have little enough as it is. Anyway, just been listening to you for a while. Want to get a chance to talk to you. Love your show. Just very refreshing. I live in a very red corner of a blue state. I'm in upstate New York, and the local airways are just clogged with nothing but Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, and of course, you know, you turn on Sirius, and even there, you mostly have Fox News and Patriot, which is an oxymoron. It's a big crock of you know what. So all I have is Sirius left, and thank God for that, or whoever you know, whatever invisible man in the sky you pray to. you're definitely by far one of my favorites on the Left Wing Network, just because third party advocate, I'm very strongly also myself. Registered Democrat when I was 18, mainly because I come from a family that, we all registered Democrat just because, you know, back then they only thought there were two choices. Really no party affiliation. I do like the Green Party. Actually, my father got Invisible Man again. He's on Green Party. I've looked at several, quote unquote, third parties. Personally, I believe we either need to have 7, 8, 9, 10, 100 different political parties or none at all, because I think the party system really is part of the problem in this.
Well, it is. And the framers of the Constitution warned against it. I think any civilized country should have a parliamentary system. I look to the system they have in Canada, the UK, various African countries, various European countries. They have a parliamentary system.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there can still be corruption, there can still be trouble, but you can get rid of the bastards very quickly and move on. Clinton, there's the music. I got to leave it there. Thank you, pal. Thank you for the nice compliments about the program. I appreciate it. And I hope you call again. Take care. We'll be right back.
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Michael Orr.
21 past the hour. Margo Paez is in Los Angeles. Her website, hi Margo, insideoutnews.org, I believe, right? Or .com?
.org?
.org. Margo has been streaming most of the day. I don't think you are right now, are you?
No, I am not. I had to take a break. Reporting all day is extremely exhausting.
Yeah, for real.
I had to run over to North Hollywood to co-host a show at KPFK. So I've been running around all day doing reporting all over the place. But I'm glad to be here with you and to give you and your listeners a bit of an update on what's going on here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
So today has been really busy. I think it's unique here in Los Angeles. They have something called the Four Winds the occupiers had, and they were coming in from all four sides of Los Angeles. The unions were out. There's two really big immigrant marches throughout the day, but no conflict with the police, although there was a lot of police presence here, and there's still a lot of police officers here. It's 7:22 here in Los Angeles, but the occupiers are going to be having a general assembly at 7:30. There's still music going on in Pershing Square where I'm at. And I talked to one of the officers, one of the PIOs earlier today, and he said that the permit ends at 7:30. And at 7:30 is when the general assembly begins. So it's kind of a wait and see as to what is going to happen here. And just as I was waiting to talk to you or with you, I saw a procession of 20 police cars come down the hill on Olive and make a right on Fifth Street. And I'm on Fifth and Hill, and so just a block over is Fifth and Olive. And all along that street are 20 police cars there. Mm. So it's, you know, we're waiting to see what's going to happen. You know, are we going to get our fill of baton today? That's kind of the question for me. But I know other parts of the country have already have seen police aggression. We haven't quite seen any of that yet, but they're here. They're here. There's lots of guns, and none of the protesters have guns.
Has anything happened today, Margo, that or in the past couple hours that would, at least in the minds of the city administration, would justify sending that many police into the area?
No, nothing. In fact, it feels very much like an outdoor festival with all the music that's been playing all day since most of the marches ended. And a lot of the unions are here, and the unions actually organized a lot of the performances, but there's been no reason to see all of these officers. There was like a SWAT vehicle, and it's still here, and it's from the sheriff, the LA County Sheriff. I walked over there, did some interviews, talked to one of the sheriffs there, and it doesn't make sense to have so many police, to have this type of aggressive, militant response to people who are here totally peacefully protesting, just expressing their First Amendment right. It doesn't make any sense. And to me, and based on my experience covering a lot of these protests here in Los Angeles, is that this tends to either frighten people or agitate people to act aggressively.
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. We talked to Sanchez earlier from LA, mm-hmm. and from Seattle. And the agitation, it's almost like,
uh-huh.
You okay?
Yeah, just somebody was blowing the horn. So.
Okay.
We're good still.
It's almost like the authorities are trying to provoke something. And of course, media love the provocation. Media love to swirl around where something non-peaceful is happening, because that's what television does. Television has to have action.
Right.
It has to have conflict. If there's no conflict, there's no television. So
exactly. Yeah, and here there's no sign of anyone trying to create any violence, but definitely it feels like they're waiting for something to happen, or they may cause something to happen. Again, we have to wait and see 7:30 come and go. And it's just another one of those stand-ups that we've had in the past with occupiers, with the eviction of Occupy LA. It's a standoff as to who's going to do what. Mm-hmm. We've had people here from the National Lawyers Guild. I spoke with Jim Lafferty of the National Lawyers Guild, and he talked to the LAPD as well. And he said, you know, the park closes at 10:30. Are you going to kick people out? And they said, yeah. And they said, yeah, we will. Once it closed at 10:30, he said, well, you can't keep them from being on the sidewalk. And there was a bit of a concession. But I went and talked to him to the same charge afterwards. Like I said, he said that the permit's at 7:30. So it's just going to be another stand-up as to whether they're going to let people stay or go. And that's when it always tends to turn bad here in Los Angeles, is during that particular standoff. They would just let protesters go. I don't think there would be an issue.
Well, there's only 3 minutes until this General Assembly is supposed to start. So,
right.
I'll tell you what, we've got to go into a break here, Margo. If something develops within the next 30 minutes that you want to let us know about, will you call back?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Margo. Be safe.
Oh, thank you.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Definitely will.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Christopher Keller. He has a message here that is, yes, a little bit long, but that's all right, Christopher. Here's what he's quoting Anonymous. Anonymous says, President Obama is definitely the lesser of two evils. However, he doesn't need your vote to win. The media, though, in its eternal quest for ratings and controversy, is making this presidential election out to be a horse race. It is not. If you look hard at the electoral map and filter out the nonsense in the polls, you would conclude President Obama wins, just not by a landslide. What to do? Participate in this farce of a democracy, cower in fear over what could happen, which is beyond your control anyway. Why not be strategic and pragmatic instead? Cast a meaningful vote by voting third party, like Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party. Send a message of hope for the future and help put the brakes on the headlong rush into fascism that the Democratic Republican Party has set for us. End quote, Anonymous. Thanks, Christopher. If you find, I went to The Guardian of the UK. They have somebody live streaming from New York on Ustream. If you can get to that video, there seems to be some ugliness going on between protesters and uniformed police in Manhattan. You can check that out if you want to. Tim in L.A., listening online. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on. And thank you for the sponsorship Monday, because we had a lot of people at Manzanar.
You had a lot of people what?
At Manzanar.
Oh, right. Okay, great.
Thank you very, very much, and your advertising does work. You hear that, people?
Okay, well, I'm glad some publicity came out of it.
Excuse me. The reason why I'm calling is because, just to explain a couple things. For example, what Margo saw, and I was watching that on her video, at tinyurl.com/Margo Mayday. You can also watch it, too, on her video streaming.
Okay.
Is the truck is a SWAT truck, or actually what the L.A. County Sheriff's called the SCB, Special Enforcement Bureau. That's, of course, that's a version of SWAT. And because they were parked there, they're parked there by the exit to the train station or subway. It's because that's their jurisdiction. And that's why they're assembled there. And to answer Sanchez's question, why were there so many helicopters hovering around? Well, I was monitoring not only Margo's videos, but also the LAPD. And there was a skateboarder. They wanted a question. Because they accused him of striking a female officer with a skateboarder.
You mean struck her with a skateboard?
Skateboard, yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay.
They struck her with a skateboard, so they wanted to question him. And if it was him, charged him with assault with a deadly weapon against a peace officer.
Hmm.
So that's why the media went haywire, because I heard it. So if I heard it, the media would hear it. And I guess they wanted to see him. But they couldn't find him, though.
Oh, God. This is kind of ridiculous, don't you think?
It is. It is very ridiculous. And so that's why everything is going haywire. And I guess the next thing is at 7:30 our time, where right now they probably want to start moving everyone out of Pershing Square because, you know, that's when the permit ends.
Well, also that's when there's supposed to be L.A. Occupied General Assembly, right?
Right, the GA is going to be there, but prior to this, the previous GAs, they didn't say anything. They didn't do anything.
No. Well, it's eight minutes past the start time. I will probably try to, I don't know if Margo is going to be streaming anymore, but tonight. But there are streams out there, and I think people ought to log on and take a look at what's happening, whatever it is. What's happening in New York is not very nice. There is several streams coming from New York. And it appears that arrests are occurring now rather quickly, I guess. I'm not sure. All right, Tim.
One more thing. And one interesting thing was, you know, I was listening to the scanner online, and there's this group, I'm going to find out later, called the Shadow Team.
Right.
Because the air support unit was running out of fuel, said, why don't we get the shuttle team to rescue, you know, to get the guy? Like, what's a shuttle team?
that's another police operation that you're not supposed to know about, apparently.
And I found out.
Right.
All right, thank you, Mike.
All right, Tim, stay in touch. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. Take care. You know, coming up next hour, I'm going to be talking about torture. And I hope you stick around for that. Eddie's in Garland, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, Mr. Malloy. How are you?
I'm fine.
You might remember me. I made the zombified comment a while back.
The what comment?
The zombified comment.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, cool. So I remember me. Okay, well, I heard the right wing caller that you hung up on, man. Kudos on that. And I just wanted to comment about some of their philosophies, if you call it that. You know, today's the anniversary of the killing of Bin Laden or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I find it very inconvenient how the right wing, you know, when Bush was in office, I was 21 or something, 20 when that unfortunate event happened on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly how long after the attacks happened, but in the run up to the Iraq War, you know, George Bush was saying things like, I'm not really concerned with where Osama bin Laden is,
right,
you know?
Right.
And now they want to just forget about it, you know? And Mike, you're a real sharp guy, you know? I mean, you give the honest truth. And it's very hard to find that in the mainstream, you know? And they just forget about these things, man. Mm-hmm. Like it's convenient to forget about that, but it's not so convenient to look at the truth, you know?
Right, exactly.
And it just pisses me off. I mean, you know, my dad's Persian, man. I mean, I'm a first-generation son of a legal immigrant, you know? Whether legal or not, it doesn't matter. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's very hard for me to see through the bias and see how good people really are when they do that kind of stuff.
No, I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. Absolutely.
You know, and you're one of the good guys, and thanks for, you know, again, you know, I haven't called you in a while, but thanks for standing up for us younger people, man, because that's what you're doing, you know, and I told Mrs. Malloy that, and I'm telling you that, you know, so appreciate the good work, soldier.
Thanks, Eddie. I'm glad you called. I hope you call again. Take care, okay?
Will do, sir.
All right, take care. Well, that was nice. Young people. You know, I remember those days. I was young once, and it took a while to shake me loose from, you know, whatever kind of ennui or lethargy or just disinterest or boredom or whatever that was going on with me in my late teens, early 20s. But I think the Gulf of Tonkin incident was what got me, because even when Lyndon Johnson came on the television that night and announced it, I knew it was a damn lie. I knew it then. I knew it was a lie. And even if it were true, a couple of little North Vietnamese patrol boats attacking a U.S. minesweeper or some huge-ass boat. And it was treated as though it were some kind of attack, like Germany crossing the border into Poland. It just, and right then and right there. Now, within 6 months, of course, I was standing with a bunch of other guys at Jacksonville Naval Air Station taking a pre-induction physical. And Lyndon Johnson was talking about sending, and he did, another 500,000 Americans to go do the one thing he said when he was vice president he didn't want to do. Well, I don't think we should have American boys fighting wars for Vietnamese boys should be fighting. Remember that? Of course you do. But it's young people who make the difference. And I said when the Occupy movement began last fall, you know, thank God, so to speak, that there they were again. Young people. Late teens, early 20s, mid-20s, late 20s, early 30s, who were saying again, they were making the statement again, as they have so many times in the history of this country, no, we're not going to continue this. We're not going to continue this war. We're not going to continue this racism. We're not going to continue to allow the 1% to devour the rest of us. We're not going to continue to do it. Okay. So respect for young people, that's where the hope is. You know it as well as I do. Those of us who have been down this road before, who have been in demonstrations, who have gotten arrested, and all this other stuff, you know, we are on the sidelines now. I mean, we can go out there and demonstrate, but it's young people who have to do it. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Christopher. Quoting Anonymous, President Obama is definitely the lesser two evils. However, he doesn't need your vote to win. The media, though, in its eternal quest for ratings and controversy, is making this presidential election out to be a horse race. It is not. If you look hard at the electoral map and filter out the nonsense in the polls, you will conclude President Obama wins, just not by a landslide. What to do? Participate in this farce of a democracy, cower in fear over what could happen? Why not be strategic and pragmatic instead? Cast a meaningful vote by voting third party, like Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party. Send a message of hope for the future and help put the brakes on the headlong rush into fascism that the Democratic Republican Party has set for us. Good advice, Chris. Thank you. Anita is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Anita.
Hello. I want to report that our May Day was absolutely beautiful. We had thousands of people. Well, it starts off with the Native Americans have a big parade because it's also American Indian Month. And then the occupiers were all over the city occupying. And then the workers did a thousands of people march. It was beautiful. No problems at all. And the chant was, "We are unstoppable, a new world is possible. We are unstoppable, a new world is possible." Ours went very nice. Police were out in full force, but they just stood back and everything was cool.
This was in Minneapolis and St. Yeah. Paul or downtown Minneapolis? Or...
Minneapolis, all over the city of Minneapolis. Was very nice. I just wanted to report that in because we're not getting no press because nothing happened.
Yeah, isn't that that's usually the way it works. If there's not violence, the media will stay away from it.
Won't even report that thousands.
No,
yeah.
No. I was just looking. A friend just sent me a report from the BBC on what occurred in this country today, and that's a very good report. The coverage was fair, and it did mention a couple of arrests, but not with this kind of sensational horse hockey that American media always go for. So anyone who wants kind of an overview of what occurred, in this instance, I would say don't go to the New York Times, go to the BBC online, and they will give you a pretty good coverage. Well, I'm glad things went well in Minneapolis.
Thank you for taking this call.
Absolutely. Take care. I appreciate you checking in. I wonder if our friend Janet Roberts was out today. Oh, I'm sure she was. Right, Janet? I know you're listening. She owns owns the station that carries our program. Next hour, yeah, let me mention it one more time. Next hour, I'm talking about... All right, let me just back up a little bit. On 60 Minutes the other night, they interviewed former CIA chief Jose Rodriguez Jr. He's got a new book out where he tries to justify the torture that he authorized. And we're going to be talking about that next hour. It's pretty grim. He was on 60 Minutes, and Leslie Stahl nailed him a couple of times with his garbage. So stick around for that. The only other thing regarding May Day in this country today, the way media are reporting what little bits they do report, that has to it has to be part of the movement has to be and we learned this a generation ago, how to overcome the fact that you're being ignored by media. Now, it got to a point, of course, back in the 60s and 70s, it was pretty difficult to ignore 500,000 people in the street. The population of the country was only about 250 million, 210, 220 million, about 100 million less than there are now. So 500,000 people in the street in an anti-war protest was pretty difficult for media to ignore. The only time television, though, would cover the Black Liberation Movement in this country was when there was reports of violence, reports of shooting, reports of people on the street with guns, which was really funny, you know, with the NRA and all their talk about stand your ground. When the Panthers showed up with shotguns and rifles to patrol their own neighborhoods, they weren't going into the white enclaves. They didn't leave the Bantustans. They stayed where they were. But what they were doing in so many cities around this country was trying to set an example of strong, unyielding manhood for the kids who lived in these godforsaken ghetto neighborhoods that were already happening in so many big cities. And as far as the Panther movement was concerned, the one thing media wanted to see, like in Chicago, what happened in Chicago, like what happened in Oakland, you know, show us the bloodstains, show us the bullet holes, show us the sheet-draped bodies being carried out of some godforsaken tenement someplace. I just hope, I hope that the Occupy movement will figure out a way to eliminate the people who are not the least bit interested in what the Occupy movement's about. I maintain that a lot of those people are provocateurs. A lot of them are being put there by policing agencies or corporate America to destroy and disturb what this movement's about. But I hope Occupy figures out how to deal with that. You know what I'm saying? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back. This hour is being sponsored by Mary Whitmore. Thank you, Mary. It is 7 past the hour. Mary's message, another conspiracy under the radar. American K-2 students are being denied best practice for teaching reading. The textbook lobby rules. Teach English in half the time with explicit phonics. And you can find out about this by going to Spalding.org, S-P-A-L-D-I-N-G, Spalding.org, or Riggins, R-I-G-G, I'm sorry, Riggs, R-I-G-G-S, Institute, I-N-S-T.org, Riggsinst.org, or Spalding.org. Explicit phonics. I could use some of that. Terrorism. Terrorism, right? We are in an unending war on terrorism, depending on your point of view. It's either an attempt to defend America or an attempt to just raise global hell and keep everybody at home under a tight rein or a heavy fist. Take your pick. I don't know. I'm so tired of talking about terrorism. I could throw up. In the Sunday New York Times, David Shipler, Pulitzer Prize winning author, had a piece, Terrorist Plots Hatched by the FBI. Terrorist Plots Hatched by the FBI. Right? Did you read it? In that op-ed, Shipler wrote, the United States has been narrowly saved from lethal terrorist plots in recent years. Or so it has seemed. A would-be suicide bomber was intercepted on his way to the Capitol. A scheme to bomb synagogues and shoot Stinger missiles at military aircraft was developed by men in Newburgh, New York. And a fanciful idea to fly explosive-laden model planes into the Pentagon and the Capitol was hatched in Massachusetts. Woo! But, and it's a big but, all these dramas, Shipler writes, were facilitated by the FBI, whose undercover agents and informers posed as terrorists, offering a dummy missile, fake C4 explosive, a disarmed suicide vest, rudimentary training. Suspects naively played their parts until they were arrested. End quote. I don't know. Remember all the guys in Liberty City, Miami, where 4 or 5 of them that were busted because they had been promised new shoes if they blew up the Sears Tower in Chicago or something? And the 5 guys just kind of like, oh, okay, show us the boots. Okay, yeah, okay, we'll take the boots. And then they got arrested. How many times does this happen? The executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee said today, quote, the FBI has a long and recurring pattern of civil rights abuses impacting numerous law-abiding Americans from all walks of life. It has abused its investigative powers. It has violated its own guidelines. It has arbitrarily revised those guidelines to permit long-standing abuses, even in the face of congressional concerns. It has avoided public accountability by cloaking its actions in secrecy, all while actively misleading federal courts. Misleading Congress. Misleading the American people. The FBI's modus operandi, contriving fake cases to inflate its political capital, reflects an institutional need for change, screaming out for long overdue transparency, accountability, oversight, corrective legislation. Right now, if you're of a certain age, you know about this. You know all about this. You remember the Church Committee back in early to mid 70s. Frank Church, Idaho. Was he a Democrat or Republican? Was it Idaho? Long time ago. But the Church Committee investigated abuses perpetrated against the American people by the CIA back in the 70s. This was the infiltration of the CIA, FBI, NSA, just about every alphabetized organization you can think of, who were involved in penetrating and trying to subvert the civil rights movement, the student movement, the anti-war movement, the Black Power movement, the feminist movement. Any movement in the United States was seen as suspect by these alphabetized secret government organizations. They perpetrated all sorts of crimes against their fellow citizens. Everything from disruptive tactics to causing riots, up to and including killing members of the Panther Party. Which is not to say that there weren't radicals in this country in the 60s and 70s who, remember the Weatherman faction that was building bombs in one of the boroughs in New York and blew itself up. And what, two people died? This is not to say that there was no violence planned or having occurred, but so much of the violence perpetrated or thought of or planned by the left in this country resulted in the left being hurt. Isn't that kind of pathetic, sad, ironic? Whatever. Pick your own word. It was a long time ago. Who cares? Nobody cares. You should care. It was during the 70s, during the 60s, when these tactics were developed by all these ultra-secret agencies operating within the United States. And what do we have now? This broadcast, your telephone calls, emails you send, your Facebook page, Twitter, anything you tweet, blah, 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 where you go on your computer, it is all recorded somewhere. Co-conspirators, the usual gang, Google, Apple, everybody. Microsoft, phone companies. Remember the big scandal about the phone companies that went nowhere? Remember, oh, well, the phone companies gave carte blanche to government agencies to collect data on phone calls. Remember all this? I mean, it's just, nobody can, it's just, you know, who cares? Well, a couple nights ago on 60 Minutes, and this is related, they had former CIA chief Jose Rodriguez. He was on 60 Minutes to promote his new book, defending his role in the CIA's torture program and his decision to order that tapes of the torture sessions be destroyed. Did you watch this? Have you heard about this? The story about the tapes being destroyed, that was, what, several months ago? There were rumors about it several years ago. What's his name? The Heartless Bastard, until he carved someone else's out and put it in his own heart. Cheney would sit there and watch these torture videos, and rumors have it that he watched them with more than just a tad of enthusiasm, if you know what I mean. But he went on 60 Minutes. He was interviewed by Leslie Stahl. Stahl, I have to say, kept coming after him with evidence that torture hurt U.S. intelligence gathering. And she was questioning, as most people with the sense of a sack full of doorknobs, she was questioning whether the use of torture threatened to undermine fundamental American values. What are American values anymore, by the way? What are they? Do the corporations show American values? Does the Christian church show American values? Does educational system show American values? Does the business world? What are American values? Sports? Is it jacking yourself up with all kinds of chemicals and muscle enhancers so you can cheat? Where are these American values? Anybody seen them? I haven't seen them for a while, these American values. But anyway, Jose Rodriguez had some things to say. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen.
Boom time for Wall Street. Hey, won't you-
21 past the hour. So, the topic here is former CIA chief Jose Rodriguez on 60 Minutes two nights ago, Sunday, promoting his new book that defends torture. As the ACLU points out, the interview affirmed the impression that the CIA's use of crude force in interrogations was pursued with little thought to the program's moral implications or potential cost to this country. Apparently, Rodriguez was in way over his head. He didn't give a damn. Torture him. As the ACLU says, if as much time and effort had been spent considering these essential questions as was spent on creating the web of legal defenses for torture, which Rodriguez described in his interview, this dark period in American history could have been avoided. Now, in setting up Sunday's interview, Leslie Stahl highlighted Rodriguez's lack of experience in counterterrorism and the Middle East when he was appointed chief of staff of the Counterterrorism Center directly after 9/11. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. He had no idea. Didn't even understand the politics of the Middle East. This was another one of these Bush slob appointments. Somebody totally unequipped, unprepared, unschooled, unable to do the job. Last week, the Washington Post Dana Priest reported that Rodriguez appeared to be, quote, beyond his depth, end quote, when she met him in 2005. And a similar description, the ACLU says, could be used to characterize the CIA when it established an interrogation program right after 9/11. Despite his lack of experience in the field of torture. Not to worry. Now, the agency, the CIA, may have had little experience in interrogation, but last night Rodriguez said that the CIA had, quote, no lack of imagination, end quote. No lack of imagination. Maybe it was the reliance on imagination that led CIA officials to craft an interrogation program based upon the advice of an ex-Air Force psychologist who had never conducted an interrogation over the objection of veteran trainers who warned that the methods were ineffective at getting accurate information. And it may also have been imagination that led officials to dismiss then-Secretary of State Colin Powell's warnings of what Powell called the high cost of not applying Geneva Convention protections of those in U.S. custody. And Powell at the time argued, quote, this would undermine public support among critical allies, making military cooperation more difficult to sustain, end quote. But these guys don't care. They didn't care. The Bush-Cheney crime family? They didn't give a damn. Throughout that interview, Rodriguez repeatedly made assertions that the torture program was worth the cost. Despite all the evidence to the contrary. Reuters news agency recently reported that an ongoing extensive Senate Intelligence Committee investigation into the CIA torture program has found no evidence that cruel interrogations resulted in any kind of counterterrorism breakthrough. And in a statement released, it was either, Monday morning, Senators Carl Levin, chair of the Armed Service Committee, and Dianne Feinstein, chair of the Intelligence Committee, lay out the myth propagated by Rodriguez that CIA torture led to the location of Osama bin Laden and dismantled it point by point with the facts. Levin and Feinstein state, quote, we are disappointed that Mr. Rodriguez and others who left government positions prior to the Osama bin Laden operation and are not privy to all the intelligence that led to the raid, continue to insist that the CIA's so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, i.e. torture, used many years ago, were a central component of our success. This view is misguided and misinformed, end quote. But you see, that's the new meme that's being put out there. You know, a year after the extrajudicial assassination or murder, whatever you want to call it, of Osama bin Laden, justified or not, that's what it was. It was not a case of go arrest him, bring the son of a bitch to trial. It was a case of go get him, find him, and put a bullet in his head. Okay, mission accomplished. But Romney and the thugs behind him now, corporate America, the capitalists, are determined to take that, quote, success, end quote, away from Obama. So the lies begin. Well, the only reason Obama was able to get him is because we got the information. How do we get the information? Through torture. It's all a lie. What were we talking about last week? About the lies, the constant lies that are put out there. How do you or I or anybody maintain any, even a reasonable resemblance to sanity these days, right? Zero.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Ooh, dangerous. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Mary Whitmore. Her message, another conspiracy under the radar. American K-2 students are being denied best practice for teaching reading. The textbook lobby rules, but there's a better way. Teach English in half the time with explicit phonics. There's two websites you can go to, Spalding, S-P-A-L-D-I-N-G, Spalding.org, or RiggsInst.org. That's RiggsInst.org. Thanks, Mary. So, Rodriguez, former CIA chief Jose Rodriguez, who had no business being in the position he was in. He develops a torture program and in the process destroys just one more step in the de-exceptionalism movement to take the United States down to the level of those countries that don't even pretend to have a system of laws and justice in place. That's where we're heading. You know we are. Even Michael Hayden, former CIA director appointed by Bush, has stated, quote, I'm willing to concede. Listen to this. Listen to this. I'm willing to concede the point that no one gave us valuable or actionable intelligence while they were, for example, being waterboarded. That means being controlled, drowned. No one. But Jose Rodriguez, hey, it was great. We got all kinds of information. We figured out where Osama bin Laden was. Former CIA director Michael Hayden says that Rodriguez is crazier than a goddamn loon. In fact, how many reports have we talked about? How many of you read that substantial evidence suggests that the use of cruelty was counterproductive? There was an article in Vanity Fair recently where a experienced counterterrorism agent said that following false leads generated through torture caused waste and exhaustion and consumed, quote, at least 30% of the FBI's time, maybe 50% in counterterrorism, end quote. According to another former intelligence official, quote, we spent millions of dollars chasing false alarms, end quote, because of the CIA's insistence that torture used against Abu Zubaydah had provided substantial information, which it had not. Rodriguez's response to this, all this, and the rest of the word. That's his response. Oh, bull! Now, of course, the cost of using torture went beyond wasted resources. Right? The standing of the United States has been mortally wounded, as far as I'm concerned. You don't go back after you establish yourself as a torture country. There's no going back. As a bipartisan Senate report concluded in 2010, quote, the fact that America is seen in a negative light by so many complicates our ability to attract allies to our side. It strengthens the hand of our enemies and reduces our ability to collect intelligence that can save lives, end quote. We're a torture nation. Now, I know, you right-wing dog-faced bastards that listen to this, nothing against dogs. You right-wing alligator-faced bastards who listen to this program, you know, you're sitting back there going, yeah, well, you know, I used to watch, what was that program about the terrorists and everything. I know, the last minute you get the information and you save lives. I used to watch 24, just like Cheney and Bush did. You halfwits. Philip Zelikow, former deputy to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, described the measurable impact on U.S. counterterrorism efforts when he said, quote, when I worked at the State Department, some of America's best European allies found it increasingly difficult to assist us because they feared becoming complicit in a program their government supported. And this was not a hypothetical concern, end quote. When you have right-wingers like Philip Zelikow complaining, huh? But Rodriguez, bullsh, you know. So, bottom line is the ACLU writes, from Sunday night's interview, it appears Rodriguez had given little thought to the real-world costs of the CIA torture practice that he oversaw. And why would he? There's no indication that any government official will be held to account despite the creation of a CIA interrogation program that employed crude, illegal techniques known at the time to be ineffective and which unsurprisingly resulted in no actionable intelligence at great cost to America's national standing and intelligence gathering capability. Until officials like Rodriguez are held accountable, the risk remains that the U.S. officials will forget essential lessons learned and return to torture techniques. I mean, you can really get discouraged with this kind of stuff, right? But did you see the guy? Did you see the arrogant little pissant when he was on 60 Minutes Sunday night? I watched a little bit of it, and then there was nothing being discussed or said that I'm not familiar with, and probably nothing you're not familiar with. But the attitude. This is what happens when you have an administration that comes into power, and before the administration, Congress comes into power, and the first thing out of Nancy Pelosi's mouth and Barack Obama's mouth, well, we're going to look forward. We're not going to look back. So all of those crimes committed over a decade, horrendous crimes, crimes that were so bad that resulted in branding the United States as a rogue country, violating just about every agreement to which we've been a party since the end of World War II, since Nuremberg, Geneva Conventions, the Nuremberg Protocols, if that's what they're called, the conclusions drawn, the rules about how you deal with combatants. You don't make up a term called non-combatant and then deal with them with torture. I mean, everything, the legitimacy of this country, utterly and absolutely shredded by a gang of goddamn bandits that this country hasn't seen ever in its history, the Bush crime family, and everybody associated with it. and by extension, elements in the Obama administration. So here we are. American exceptionalism. Yeah, okay. That's what we talked about last night, right? American exceptionalism. E.L. Doctorow wrote the piece in the Sunday op-ed section, How to Foster Unexceptionalism. Not that any of that was ever true, but at least there was a common myth that, you know, most Americans, native-born or immigrants, naturalized, you know, and, oh, yeah, I'm the United States, man. We are special. We don't do those things. And it took one sick son of a bitch, Dick Cheney, and one weakling, drug-addled freak, George Bush, to absolutely destroy it. Now, Lee in New York City wrote something to me. He said, Rodriguez needs to learn American history. Here's a quote from Scott Horton's A Tale of Two Georges that was published at Huffington Post from 2007. Quote, following the Battle of Trenton in 1776, George Washington set firm rules for the treatment of prisoners in American custody. Quote, treat them with humanity and let them have no reason to complain of our copying the brutal example of the British Army in their treatment of our unfortunate brethren who have fallen into their hands, end quote, he wrote. In all respects, the prisoners were to be treated no worse than American soldiers, and in some respects better. Through this approach, George Washington sought to shame his British adversaries and to demonstrate the moral superiority of the American cause. He also anticipated that the prisoners, treated with such attention and care, would reconsider their loyalties by the end of the war and embrace the American cause. But Washington makes clear that he took this approach in the end because of the experience in the wilderness, his experience in the wilderness, and the lesson he learned there. Soldiers who mistreated prisoners, who took up cruel practices, were bad and unruly soldiers. The discipline and morale of the entire fighting force was undermined by such conduct. For George Washington, the issues were clear on both a moral and practical level, and his guidance was given with firm conviction. George W. Bush? The dry drunk that had the titular, or the position of titular head of this country for 8 years? And what was his attitude? Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Mary Whitmore. Her message, another conspiracy under the radar. American K-2 students are being denied best practice for teaching reading. The textbook lobby rules. Teach English in half the time with explicit phonics. And she has two websites here, Spalding.org, S-P-A-L-D-I-N-G, Spalding.org, or RiggsInst.org, R-I-G-G-S. INST.org. Check them out. Okay, thanks, Mary. Appreciate it very much. concluding here, the reason I brought this up is because this interview on Sunday. You know, once again, you Leslie Stahl did the best job she could. But it was kind of like watching somebody who is kind of restricted in sitting there calling this bastard a liar. Leslie Stahl did the best she could. She also brought up John McCain. McCain spoke against torture. But as Lee in New York City points out, he was a prisoner of war and torture victim. From the ABC article, in McCain's best-selling 1999 memoir, Faith of Our Fathers, McCain writes, quote, "Once my condition had stabilized, my interrogators resumed their work. Demands for military information were accompanied by threats to terminate my medical treatment if I did not cooperate. Eventually, I gave them my ship's name and squadron number and confirmed that my target had been the power plant. Pressed for more useful information, I gave the names of the Green Bay Packers offensive line and said they were members of my squadron. When asked to identify future targets, I simply recited the names of a number of North Vietnamese cities that had already been bombed." Great information, huh? And in the words of a former Navy SEAL from JesseVentura.net, Ventura had this from his appearance on ABC's The View, quote, "Enhanced interrogation techniques is Dick Cheney changing the word. Dick Cheney comes up with a new word to cover his ass. Hey, I've said it before. You give me a waterboard, 1 hour, and Dick Cheney, and I'll have him confessing to the Sharon Tate murders." End quote. Finally, as Lee in New York City writes, imagine how you would act if you were tortured to identify the next target. You know, the next terrorism target. When days of "I don't know" only result in increasing pain, would you just pick a city? Any lie to end the pain? Torture will get an answer. And the answer cannot be trusted. So here we are, and to me it's an issue that is it's one of those issues that if I allow myself, I don't know how this works with you, but if I allow myself to just sit and think about it, contemplate my exceptional country, my exceptionalism because I'm an American. You know, my blessing, as the right-wing religious freaks like to say, because I happen to have been born here. And I think about all that, and I think, yeah, but let's assume all that's true. Let's assume that you are exceptional, Mike, because you were born in an exceptional country, the United States, and you are blessed by this sky spook that so many people believe in. Let's assume that's true. Does that hold up against torture? Taking other human beings and deliberately, consciously maiming, injuring, wounding them psychologically, physically to try to get information that is useless, worthless, made up. You know, the classic example to me are the scenes in 1984 between O'Brien and Winston Smith. Now, I don't have the novel in front of me here, but I remember O'Brien telling Winston in a very sympathetic way, as Winston is you know, tied to a torture table where he's being given these horrendous electric shocks, and O'Brien leaning close to him, almost stroking him, and then reaching into Winston Smith's mouth and pulling out a couple of teeth, just ripping them out of his gums. And O'Brien saying, "Winston, you know, it's not enough that you just agree with us. You have to believe in what you're saying." And eventually, of course, with the use of Room 101, Winston Smith came to believe anything that O'Brien, and consequently Big Brother, wanted him to believe, anything. Because if you remember, what was in Room 101 is the most horrible thing in the world. Unspeakable terror. So, drowning. Is drowning like the rat cage that they put over Winston Smith's head? Will you say anything? This is what's happened to our country. And the Democrats said, no, we're not going to look back. We're going to look forward. No, we're not going to hold anybody accountable. No. It doesn't matter. And you know what? In a sense, they're right. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter any longer. And that, to me, that's the shame. That's the thing that I am stuck with and you are stuck with when you try to teach your kids or your grandkids or your nieces and your nephews about what it means to be a citizen. Of course, you can always just throw your hands up in the air and strap them into a chair and put them in front of Glenn Beck's online program. Huh? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.